Recently, I read a book on leadership from a business consultant, Seth Godin. In the book, he describes the Peter principle, which suggests that people rise to their level of their incompetence. So the better you do in your work, the more often you get promoted, and this happens over and over again until you are in a position where you are over your head. Seth likes to reimagine the Peter principle. He suggests that people rise to the level at which they become paralyzed by fear. In the gospel, according to John, resurrection works the same way. The disciples are nowhere to be found. It's been 3 days since the crucifixion of Jesus. And this is a problem because Jesus expected these disciples to continue his work and his ministry. People still needed to be fed. People still needed to be clothed. People still needed healing and prayer. And the good news still needed to be preached. But all of that potential was entombed with the disciples. The disciples were locked inside of their house in fear. The point of crucifixion is to bury the people who are still alive and to fill them with fear. And it was working. For about 3 days, Jesus was gone. The believers, or the disciples, were entombed. They were barricaded. They were locked in. And all of the doors pried open by Jesus' life and ministry were slammed shut. Locked doors make me rethink resurrection. What if Jesus' resurrection was pure ambition? Perhaps Jesus was upset that the disciples were behind locked doors, that he got out of his tomb to get them out of their tomb. Jesus wanted them to unlock the door, to go back into the world, and to continue what he had started. But fear. Fear has this ability to take away our capacities. And at first, we may find some comfort in fear. We can think that fear can keep us safe. Conventional wisdom says that a little bit of fear keeps you alive. A little bit of fear can protect you. There's even a strand of fear that tempts us to believe that fear can save us. It prevents us from risking too much. It ensures that we keep our own interests close to hearts, and it keeps us secure. Theologian Howard Thurman reminds us that fear can serve as a safety device or a protective mechanism that eventually leads to the death of the self. The fear that we thought could save us becomes our executioner. Thurman describes what it looks like when fear becomes this executioner. And it sounds a lot like the experience of the disciples before the risen Christ appears to them. First, they shut themselves off from the world. There's an inclination to try to create space that is separate from the world, such as the space behind the locked doors of the disciples. And according to Thurman, one of the things that happens in these types of spaces is that people yield all claim to personal significance beyond the little world in which they live. Fear had convinced the disciples that they had no significance outside of the walls of their house. They had no significance for the world, and that is a lie told to them by their fear. It's a lie that prevents them from experiencing a resurrection faith. Jesus had trusted the disciples with his gospel of new life and hope for the world. And yet the message was entombed along with the disciples. Once this insularity takes hold, the disciples have little choice except to accept life on the terms that are available. The gospel is not about accepting life on the terms that are available. The gospel is about accepting a life infused by God, a life infused with grace and compassion. It's about accepting the realization that you belong to God. That life, according to Thurman, is a life of resourcefulness. There's a Mexican proverb that would have been interesting to know if the disciples would have known it at the time. I doubt they would have. But it was so indicative of their experience behind locked doors. They buried us. They didn't know we were seeds. That's the power of the gospel. Even though that Jesus was buried, he brings forth new life. He brings forth resurrected life. Even though the disciples are tempted to be resigned by fear, they remain significant for the world. They will rise with new life and realized potential, and they will do so with the persistence of the love of God. Competency is not our obstacle to a resurrection faith. Fear is that obstacle. Because fear paralyzes us. It's the paralysis that we become incapable of turning to other people. Forgiveness becomes unimaginable. We become incapable of being vulnerable with one another and participating in Jesus' ministry of healing. The idea of trusting God becomes foreign. And that sense of fear locks in the disciples. They were making themselves available to no one. And then something happens. Jesus shows up in their midst. We don't know how. The door isn't opened. He just appears and he says, "Peace be with you." Jesus starts this process of equipping his disciples to continue his ministry. The first step for Jesus is to help the disciples dismantle their own tomb, the tomb they had made from their fear. And their significance is greater than the little world that they had created for one another. Don't let fear reduce your expectations. Don't let fear determine your self-worth. And then Jesus does something else. Jesus shows them his wounds, his hands, and his side. He's helping them confront their fear. People question the possibility of fear being taken away. But the perilous of caused by fear can be taken away. Jesus does that by showing them his wounds. It's as if he's saying, "I have wounds, but I'm alive. Trust me. There is no place you could go that I've not already been." And then Jesus offers them a peace a second time. One commentator points out that this peace offered by Jesus cannot allow the disciples to remain behind locked doors. As soon as the disciples rejoice, they are informed of a new role. No longer are they merely disciples, but they are now apostles as well. Because Jesus is about to send them out into the world just as God sent Jesus. So Jesus begins dismantling their tomb that they had created for one another. He helps them confront their fear. And then he sends them back into the world, saying, "As God has sent me, so I send you." For the sake of today's text, try this paraphrase. As God got me out of my tomb, I'm getting you out of your tomb. The locked door is not just a crisis of the disciples in the immediate aftermath of Jesus' crucifixion. The temptation for the church to stay behind closed doors is persistent. We often think that the church's role in the world is one of limited significance, and that faith, we think, is often personal and private. Thus, the church is to care for the personal and spiritual needs of its membership. If that were the case, Jesus would have just hung out with his disciples inside the house. But Jesus came for a different purpose. Jesus came to get them out of the house. They're not just disciples, but they are apostles. They are messengers sent by Christ. Jesus' ministry equipped the disciples to respond to a world of social and economic needs, as well as mutual care for one another. Jesus is not going to send these new apostles without equipping them. This is not a story about the incompetence of the disciples, because God equips God's people. The conflict of the story of the disciples has been a conflict about being paralyzed by fear, and now they're being mobilized by Jesus. So he breathes on them. And when he does, he says, "Receive the Holy Spirit." They are now equipped for ministry, and they have nothing to fear. They have been buried, but now they are seeds. Accepting the resourcefulness of God, especially in the midst of fear and death, is not easy. We trust that God, or that Jesus, appears in shut-in places and gives the Spirit. We trust that God dismantles our illusions of insignificance, equips us for faithfulness, and sends us into the world for God's sake. We have gifts from God, and those gifts are not our own. They are to be shared freely with the world for the sake of the one who gives them. Theologian John Calvin talks about that a lot in his theology. He says that our whole selves belong to God, and that we are not our own. We are not our own when it comes to how we use our will. We are not our own when it comes to setting goals. He said we don't set goals just to goals that are just expedient for us. And since we are not our own, Calvin says this allows us to forget ourselves and all that is ours. He goes on to say that we belong to God. Let us live for God. Let us die for God. Let all of our actions be ruled by God's will and wisdom. And this is possible because we belong to God alone. And if we belong to God, then should fear determine our actions and our identity? In writing about fear, Howard Thurman tells a story about Halley's Comet from his childhood. It took him a long time to see Halley's Comet because it was only visible after his bedtime. And some of his friends were, you know, talking about it all the time and would tell him about it. And there was also a general hysteria that the comet might consume the Earth. But there were rumors that if you took a comet pill, you could be saved from its despair. So one night, his mother rushed into the room to awaken him, and took him out to show him the comet. And they were both in complete awe. Eventually, he asked his mother, "What would happen to us if that comet fell out of the sky?" And she didn't respond right away. She kind of remained in that moment of silence and awe, as if she were praying. Then she said, "Nothing will happen to us, Howard. God will take care of us." At first, Mrs. Thurman's counsel may seem simple-hearted, but over the years, Howard, her son, kept returning to the majestic power of his mother's glowing words. As he experienced difficulties and hardships, "It is this faith and awareness," he says, "that overcome fear and transform it into the power to strive, to achieve, and not to yield." We do not belong to fear. We belong to God. There's a final image I want to leave us with today. I don't know if this story is to punctuate how resurrection transforms the fear of the disciples, or if this is a prayer for resurrection in the midst of fear and the brokenness of our world. I'm leaning towards the latter. This year on Monday, Thursday, Al-Shabaab militants killed 147 people in Kenya. This atrocity happened in the dining room of Garissa University College. The militant group was targeting Christians. St. Peter's Anglican Church in Garissa can be found on a quiet side street off the main road. And on the next day, Good Friday, people were afraid that churches and congregations might be the next target. Pastor George Owino received more text messages that day from people saying they weren't going to be at worship than people who came to Good Friday services. And when Easter Sunday came, there were 14 people in the early service. Generally, there are 60 to 70. And at the 9 a.m. service, there were 75 people gathered to witness the resurrection. On most Sundays, there are 200. The grief, the anxiety, the fear is real. And on Easter morning, George Owino introduced the first hymn by saying, "We have to sing this song with a happy voice." Then they sung, "O happy day, when Jesus washed our sin away." Jesus doesn't shame those living in fear. Jesus shows up and offers his peace. Jesus shows up and offers his wounds as if he was one of the 147 victims. He shows the disciples his wounds as to say there is nothing to fear. God has been there. God is here. Jesus got out of his tomb to get us out of ours.